Pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times. Somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Do you want to get your hands dirty while helping Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever complete a wildlife habitat project? Then May is your month. Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever chapters across the country are hosting hands-on habitat workdays throughout the entire month of May. Volunteerism has driven our organization since its creation. And now is the time for a perfect opportunity for you, the listener, to learn about what your local Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever chapter is doing. You can get engaged with your local community. It's a lot of fun. And you can help us move the needle for our wildlife habitat mission. And new to this year's Hands-On Habitat Month, and this is the third time we've done it, but new this year, Onyx Hunt is our 2024 Hands-On Habitat sponsor, a longtime Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever national sponsor, contributor to a wide variety of public access initiatives, including the Howard K. Vincent Wildlife Management Area, the PATH program in South Dakota. Onyx has once again stepped up for public access and public habitat through a sponsorship of this year's Hands-On Habitat Month. If you want to learn more and check out the website as you listen to this episode, go to pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org/hands-on-habitat. Joining me for today's Hands-On Habitat episode of On the Wing podcast are Nina Hoekstra, a chapter volunteer with McLeod County chapter of Pheasants Forever in Minnesota, Dave Scherf, a longtime volunteer with the Metro Twin Cities chapter of Pheasants Forever, and he just travels around the country going to hands-on habitat projects, and serving as co-host, welcome back, Will Clayton, the senior regional representative for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever in eastern Minnesota. So we'll go around the horn. Nina, ladies get to go first with introductions today. Thank you very much for coming across town.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell our listeners a little bit about who you are.
For sure. So my name is Nina. I am from Broughton, Minnesota, and I've been a part of the McLeod County chapter for 2 years or so. And in my day job, I recently left my job as a nurse, and I own a media and marketing business in the outdoor space. So I get to do this all the time and do fun things like this all the time, which is really awesome.
I get to
help pheasants all the time, which is the best part.
So you're a tremendous follow on Instagram.
Oh my gosh.
Throw out your Instagram handle.
Yeah, so my Instagram handle is In Nina's Nature. So
In Nina's Nature.
Yes.
And you had a reel recently about your transition from nursing,
yes,
to this multimedia outdoor world.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing a little bit about, you know, kind of, well, you put it on Instagram, so I'm guessing you're okay with me asking. Tell us a little bit about this major life change for you.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was unexpected, but also not at the same time. I had been already doing the social media thing for years. I've been doing it for 4 years now. And I was just searching. I knew I needed to make a change, but I just didn't quite know what it was going to be. And then this year at Pheasant Fest, I was meeting with some different people, and they were asking my advice on how to take photos and videos, and why don't I do this full time? And it kind of just dropped in my lap, and I was like, why don't I do this full time? And so, yeah, it was like a door flew open, and the opportunity was there, and it's been scary and exciting and all the things ever since. So it's been a month and a couple of days since I left my job and am pursuing this full time. So
congratulations. That takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes something.
And like the watershed moment was at Pheasant Fest?
It was.
In Sioux Falls?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was this year. So.
Wow. Yeah. Are you able to share some of the companies or businesses that you're working with?
Yeah. So one of my most recent ones was Ugly Dog Hunting Company. Mike, he's incredible.
Yeah.
A good friend. And then also one coming up, White Duck Outdoors. They are a Western-based company. They do canvas tents. I also work with High Plains Gear. They are a upland vest company. So, yeah, we're just getting started. So, and then like Pro Plan, I work with them a little bit. Garmin, I work with them. So, things like that.
Sweet. Well, congratulations. It sounds like you're off and running.
Thank you.
That takes a lot of courage to, I mean, that's a really 360-degree change.
Yeah.
To go from a nurse to marketing and media in the outdoor space. So it's,
yes.
And you've already got clients. That's super, that's awesome. And on top of that, you're a volunteer. So thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have a dog at home?
Yes, I have a lab. So he's 3. And he's my buddy. His name is Redlin.
I see you smiling, Will.
That's right. You hear that?
Yeah. Will knows what's up.
Supreme bird hunting dog.
Oh, my gosh. Come on.
You're up next, Dave, so why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Dave Scherf, and I don't know. I'm a longtime volunteer. I'm retired now. It wasn't when I started. I had a construction company for
construction,
Yeah, I did that, so it was fun.
What kind of construction?
Oh, home remodeling, just basic home remodeling stuff. So
okay.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Western suburbs mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was a youth pastor. I worked with Young Life. I don't know if you know, it's a youth organization.
They have a fishing event in Minnesota, don't they?
They probably do. Okay. Yeah, anymore. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm out of touch with the Young Life, so I just don't know.
And you were chuckling about the dog comments, so you've got your opinion.
Oh, come on. I've had Drahthars. Well, I've had labs too.
That's right.
But then I saw the light.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I went to Drahthars, and I've had wire hairs, and I had Drahthars. Now I've got one Drahthar that's 10 years old, Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one Llewellyn Setter, who's 3. And thinking that a Llewellyn Setter was going to be a good pheasant dog was a lot of work. So we're having a lot of fun, though. It's good.
See, so we are friends also on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from my perception of you, your Llewellyn Setter is your pride and joy.
Oh, just really is. I love this dog. It's been fun. The only problem with the dog is it hunts at 150 yards. So, I mean, you know,
that's supposed to do.
That's its natural range. Well, yeah, but on pheasants, when Odin goes on point, the tail goes boing, just like this, when he's on point.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, you know, I'm working my way to get, I have 2 fake knees, so it takes me a little longer to get through the brush than anybody else. But I don't run, but I try and go as fast as I can. But, you know, about halfway there, all of a sudden the tail starts to just wiggle a little bit like this. And you know what that means? What I've learned is that means the bird has run away. Yeah, it's gone.
When the flag starts waving, huh?
Yeah. So then, you know, I mean, you get there and you release Odin and he goes running in there. It's like, where is it? And then he's flying all over the place trying to find the bird that isn't there. That's really cute. But, you know, after 10 of those, you're like, so all winter we've been working on getting Odin inside the gun range a little bit.
So. Odin. That's a fun name.
Odin. Yeah.
That's a very Minnesota Viking sort of name.
He has a black patch on one eye. Mm. And it happens to be on the left eye. And if any of you are fans of who is the comic book hero that we watch on TV all the time? Marvel Comics with a hammer.
Oh, Thor?
Thor. If you watch any Thor, you get to see Odin, his father.
Uh-huh.
And Odin has a black patch on his eye. And in Norse mythology, that's because Odin gave up one eye in order to gain wisdom.
Okay.
So he got wisdom, but he had to give up one of his natural eyes in order to be able to see more around the world.
And you're still working on the wisdom and yeah, the Llewellyn yeah. version.
Right? We don't have any of that. We don't have any of that. Well, we're doing the best we can.
What is your pup's name, Nina?
Redlin.
Redlin? Mm-hmm. As in Terry Redlin?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. He's a red lab. Very generic. Like, I couldn't just name my dog Red. Like, couldn't bring
you
myself.
You could.
I could.
Maybe Blake Shelton did.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people do that, but I couldn't bring myself to do that.
Well, that's cool. Redlin. Yeah. I don't think I've met a Redlin dog before.
No.
Yeah. That's a cool name.
Yeah.
All right, Will. You've been sitting by calmly. Team Lab here.
That's right.
He knows what's up.
And you were once an English setter guy.
I was. And I've met Odin a handful of times. It's just, I love him. I really do. But right now, currently, we're a Labrador family. And we're very happy about that. Mojo's doing just fine. He's coming into year three this fall. And we're hitting a stride. So it's super fun.
And congratulations are in order because your family is indeed growing.
That's right. Mojo got a brother. Harvey, my baby boy, was born Christmas Day, 2023.
Oh, I didn't know it was Christmas wow. Day.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Wow. So he's 4 months old, and they're getting along, kind of, the dog and the baby, but I'm not quite sure that they're best buddies yet. But once the dino nuggets start falling on the floor, I think Mojo's really going to like the baby. So we're good.
And for frequent listeners to the podcast, you have been on a number of them. You were on, the first one would have been with Sabin.
Correct.
Bird hunting on a budget.
Yep. Smoke them if you got them.
Smoke them if you got them.
Yep.
Then you were on like Volunteer of the Year.
Yep.
Right?
We brought together a bunch of really incredible young dynamic volunteers from across the country and just highlighted the success in our chapters.
And yep. then Rooster Road Trip this year. So, well, I guess fall of 23.
Correct.
Episode one?
The Minnesota. Yeah. When we were in Minnesota. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. So I, yeah, this is number four. You keep having me back.
There we go.
He must like you.
You drive listens.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know about that.
Well, thank you all for coming over and sharing. As you know, the theme for today's conversation is our hands-on habitat month is going on right now. It's the third time we've done it. We've bounced around months over the years trying to figure out what the right month is. We did it in April in 2022,
yep.
and we kind of learned that's heart of turkey season in some places.
And fourth winter in Minnesota in the upper latitudes.
There is that. Yeah. And then we bounced it to June last year, and that happened. It was in kind of the philosophy there. The thought process was put it in conjunction with Pollinator Week and try to boost up pollinator projects. But June is a peak of the hatch and nesting season and summer and hot. And so now we are in May.
Yeah.
Give us your perspective on kind of an overview of hands-on habitat, because you were part of the very beginning of this idea.
The idea, sure. I mean, I would argue Pheasants Forever chapters, Quail Forever chapters, and volunteers have been doing hands-on habitat work since inception. It's probably right. the first thing we did outside of the banquet, right?
Yeah.
But if you can remember in those years, you know, 3 years ago, we were kind of coming out of a pretty unique situation at a global level, and we were inside a bunch. Mm. And so there were some conversations that we had where, you know, what can we do to kind of restart this? And how can we restart this in the right way? And, you know, to me, habitat work, the idea that a volunteer and their chapter goes out and improves conditions in their local community, I mean, that's the core of this place. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to put some marketing behind it and just like elevate this to our followers, the people in the community that maybe attend the banquet but haven't done a habitat project with them, and that was just a ton of momentum behind that. And so we launched it. And we've bounced it around, but May feels right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a ton of projects that are going off in May. Some happen in April. Some are going in June. And you can do them at any time. This is just sort of our centralized month to do it. And, I mean, I love it. There's just it's just really fun to get together as a community, as a chapter, and do some good.
Yeah.
That's really what we're all about here, in my opinion. So,
yeah, this habitat projects, getting your fingernails dirty, working up a sweat. I mean, that is the 1982 origin story of Pheasants Forever and the 2005 origin story of Quail Forever. You know, that's what we've have a hallmark, part of the identity or DNA of who we are. But as you, as time keeps marching on and we as communities get more and more disconnected, you know, there's that, unless you're involved in the chapter, it's like, oh, well, what do you guys do at the chapter level? Like, what, you go to a banquet and then what, right? Yeah, and unless you're part of the community, like the community knows, mm-hmm. like they're doing all sorts of projects, but this was a marketing effort to wrap a package around it and to broaden out the audience. Because one thing we know from marketing research is there's, particularly in generation of folks that are 30 years and younger, they really want to get involved as opposed to join. And I say they because I'm no longer in that demographic bubble, unfortunately. But that's like at the, I think it's number two. Like the number one thing is political advocacy, like, you know, creating public lands through, you know, land acquisition and VPA HIP, you know, walk-in programs. But number two is getting involved in actually doing some habitat work. And that's absolutely what this connects, you know, people with a broader audience that maybe aren't involved at the community level. When I say habitat project or hands-on habitat, that can fit a lot of different buckets, can't it?
It sure can.
like picking up tires.
Yeah, Bob and I, we'll get to it, I'm sure, but I'm still sore. We moved a lot of junk and tires on Saturday in a light drizzle. But and you know, I've been a part of a handful of these mm-hmm. since inception, and so we've done a lot. But you know, pollinator plantings, invasive tree removal, invasive species removal. We have chapters that are doing just like native prairie planting at a smaller scale, you know, things you can get done in a half a day, but something that's really special. And then, you know, removing a lot of rotten, wet barbed wire mm-hmm. tires. And you just can't believe what you find when you start digging on some of these public parcels. And you see it in the fall when you're running your dogs, but you're more focused on the birds mm-hmm. and the whole bit. And then, you know, the goal is just to make these places more accessible, make them a little bit, either better habitat or safer for the dogs and the people that are using them. And at least the event we attended on Saturday, it's a better place out there now. So
it is a better place. And, you know, there's a lot of garbage out there on public lands, whether it's WMAs, state forests, national forests. You know, one takeaway for me is, you know, if you need to get rid of tires, please do it appropriately. The public service announcement. I mean, I cannot believe how many tires. And when you think about it, there's tires all over. I mean, it seems like people don't know how to get rid of them, and they dispose them on public wildlife areas across the country, and it's infuriating. So one takeaway is tires, please get rid of them correctly. Second takeaway is there, whatever the fine is for littering on a big level, it's not enough.
Right.
There should be bigger repercussions for screwing up the beauty of nature in our public land. That was another thing that is like, so here's your wild card question that none of you expected. What was occurring to me is we were picking up all this garbage. I was like, what's the weirdest thing I've seen on public land from somebody? And I don't want to like make a positive out of that, but it's just remarkable that people use nature as a dumping ground. And one time, so I'll go first so you can think of what's the weirdest thing that you all have seen. I was grouse hunting in northern Wisconsin, and somebody had dumped a boat on a trailer in a county forest. And I called the Wisconsin DNR, and like the week later, it was gone. So kudos to the Wisconsin DNR, because they like on the stick got it out of there. But can you imagine what goes through a person's head? It's like, oh, my boat has no value anymore. It, whatever, it doesn't float, or the motor doesn't work, or whatever. So what's going through a person's head where they just drive into the woods, unhook a trailer, push it down into the ditch and drive away and feel okay with themselves. To me, that's just reprehensible.
Absolutely.
But kudos to the Wisconsin DNR. Thank you for cleaning that up. But that's the wildest thing that I've ever seen. Anything come to your mind, Will?
Well, this is a long time ago in the 90s, and I was a little kid, and we were messing around on a piece of property that was close to our home growing up. And we're doing things 9 and 10-year-olds are doing, and we're throwing rocks at a toilet that was placed on a piece of public land. And it gets weirder. A toilet in itself is weird. Why you would put that in your vehicle and drive it out to a piece, that, where are we going with that?
Right.
But we found a big enough rock and mustered up our 9-year-old strength, and we cracked it in half, essentially. And there were, I can't remember exactly, but there were 2 or 3 credit cards that were stuck in the bowl of the toilet.
What?
And yes. And so I was a good little boy, other than we were breaking up toilets on public land. And I brought them to my parents, and they called. I can remember this because this is so random.
Yeah.
And they had the police, the local police in my hometown, had the record of the stolen credit cards. And somehow they ended up in a toilet out on a piece of property that me and my, you know, weird little rebellious friends broke apart. So
that's really weird.
That's a weird one. I wasn't ready for that, but I guess I was.
Yeah.
So it can happen.
Nina, anything occur to you?
I don't have anything like super strange, but I am always saddened by the amount of those stupid balloons.
Oh yes.
Like what in the, and how they end up in like the most random of places. I'll be out walking around, mm-hmm. and it's like it is so caught up in something. And so yeah, I'm constantly carrying those things around in my bag that I pick up, like, and it makes me so sad. Like, can we just get rid of those, please?
Right on. So I do that too. Like, and my wife Meredith, bless her heart, she doesn't carry a shotgun, but she wears a hunting vest, and we mm-hmm. just fill it with garbage.
Yeah.
But old shotgun shells mm-hmm. that people didn't pick up, cans, bottles. Mm-hmm. So the Mylar balloons, like. Ugh. Don't spend your money on Mylar balloons. Mm-hmm. Just go ahead and buy the bouquet of flowers. Right? Am I right?
Seriously.
Well, there you go.
All right, Dave, your turn.
You know, I don't know if this is the weirdest, but we, in fact, on one of the projects we were just on, one of my volunteers found a pile of old farm stuff,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
that they were trying to remove with a bobcat, and she went in there and started digging around. Because she likes to collect old stuff, and she came up with a 50-gallon gas can and a cool sign, an old seed sign from Hedby from 1940s, still on the pole. Mm. And she loaded all that crap in her car, and she's like, "This is valuable stuff. This is valuable. I mean, I'll sell this stuff." And she just telling us, "You take a 50-gallon gas, you know, it's a big gas, not 50-gallon, 10-gallon gas can," and she said, "You can make a Halloween ornament out of this. You'd cut holes in it and make it into a smiley face and put a candle inside, and it's for Halloween." Okay. Power to you. I mean, whatever. Yeah. So sometimes you find treasures in the midst of that old farm junk.
It does remind me, here's your baseball nugget, the Honus Wagner, the most valuable card ever, was found in like a cement block in the foundation of a farmhouse. It was in mint condition.
What?
Yeah.
There you go.
Random. Not necessarily a public land, but yeah. I had to get the baseball bucket in there.
Yeah.
All right. Hands-on habitat. Dave, how many in these have you participated in so far this spring?
Just two. I've only done two.
tell us. So you are part of a chapter in Bloomington, Minnesota, right?
It's Minneapolis Metro. So we have
Minneapolis Metro.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So not a lot of habitat opportunities in Minneapolis Metro. So your chapter kind of has a unique approach in that you go out to places where you hunt.
Absolutely. And that, you know, well, not just places we hunt, but just can we create opportunities for people in the metro area to go out and do something? We don't have. You know, when we first started, and we actually appointed a habitat chair,
mm-hmm.
and then we were all new, right? We mm-hmm. started, the board started, and we were all new. We had no idea what we were doing, and we had a habitat chair because you're supposed to have a habitat chair. And then we realized we don't have any habitat, so we had a youth chair instead. So that guy had to transfer over. So we don't have any habitat to do anything with. So how do you get out there? And yet, being a pheasant hunter, all of us. I love the land. Mm. It's about the dogs. It's about the land. It's about being out there. It's not about, it's not necessarily just about pulling the trigger on a bird, right? Mm-hmm. And so to be able to go out and be on the land is, I think, is a big deal. And Metro people don't have that opportunity, really. So we started working originally with Scott Rall in Worthington and his team down there. And we've done that for a couple of years. And I was talking about that with Scott and with some other people. And the guy from Shakopee, I can't think of his name right now. Who's the head guy? Do you remember?
Of Carver, Will? John Wortman.
John Wortman. Was standing there, you know, and as soon as we were done talking, John says, hey, can we talk for a minute? Because if you guys have some volunteers, we could really use some help. And so that's how that came about. You know, I was like, okay, well, we'll put an event center up for that and also for Worthington. Getting people to drive to Worthington is, you know, a little more difficult.
Yeah.
But we have some people on board that we hunt down there together, and it's a great – Scott has 40, 45 WMAs that they're, you know, he's amazing what those guys have created down there.
Yeah, Nobles County, home of Pheasant Run 1, the very first land acquisition the organization ever put on a pin dot on the map. You can see it. It was 1986, I believe, and they've been adding public lands in Nobles County ever since. And that tremendous story there. But kudos to you for, you know, rallying the urban troops to get out and volunteer. What was the impetus for you to become a volunteer in the beginning? Was it you very eloquently talked about the value of the land? Was that the impetus?
I guess so. We got a postcard. This was 2010. Aaron Sandquist was then my upland guy, not Will. Mm. Will's my upland guy now. But I don't know if that's the right title.
It's okay.
he appreciates being called the upland guy.
I actually like that better.
He's ordering up some new business cards as we
go. There you go. Okay. Well, Aaron Sandquist, the now regional divisional director, I think that's
Midwest. Yep, Midwest director.
Okay. He was my guy back then, and he sent out a postcard to all of us. Because this was pre-event center. This was probably I don't remember, email even. I mean, we didn't have that kind of listing. And so I got this postcard in the mail from Pheasants Forever that said, Minneapolis Metro Chapter 11 is going to fold if we don't have some people show up to a meeting. And we've got to talk about
Chapter 11.
Talk about the future. Yeah. Can you believe it? They're Chapter 7. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought, wow. So I went to the meeting, and there were 40, 50 people at that meeting. It was at Gander Mountain. Remember Gander Mountain? Mm-hmm. Eden Prairie had this great room where you could meet.
Yeah.
So we got there, and, you know, we're sitting in the room, and do you remember the cartoon? Do you remember the cartoon where the devil is sitting on one shoulder, and then there's an angel on the other shoulder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and throw the pie at the guy.
No, don't do that. Remember? Okay, are you with me?
I'm with you,
okay,
yes.
So you walk in this meeting and you're sitting there, right? And Aaron says, the current board needs to step down.
Hmm.
And we just can't, it's not going to make it. We don't have enough people to have a chapter anymore if we don't have some new people step up. So who wants to be president? And I heard, I really believe in those two voices. I heard the good voice say, you need to do this. No one was saying anything. And I heard the other voice say, are you nuts?
You got so much going on in your life. What are you thinking? Are you crazy?
In some circles, they call this schizophrenia, but go ahead. Okay.
In other places, you know, I'm a Christian guy, okay, all right? We really believe in that idea that the evil one is speaking to you all the time, and so is the spirit that says, get involved. And I chose to listen to that voice. So I said, well, I'll do it, you know, and I have no previous experience of doing anything like that.
Huh.
So that's how, and then, you know, and then some of the guys that I still have as leaders, Gary Gilbertson, Steve, Ganoza wasn't there yet, but he joined really soon after that. Bill Johnson, our youth chair is still with us. You know, 15 years later, we're still all working together trying to make this thing move forward. So it's been an exciting run. But so the first impetus to me was going to a place where there wasn't going to be any Feds Forever if somebody didn't do something. So I got involved.
That's interesting, because impetus, maybe land came later. It was about the desire to do good.
Well, I would like to have. We all wanted to do habitat projects. That was my first. I'd already contacted Pheasants Forever, you know, my chapter, supposedly, and said, hey, is there anything going on? But remember, in those days, the DNR didn't want volunteers to be doing the work.
Hmm.
They were doing the work themselves, and they had machinery to do it, and that wasn't part of the ethic.
Gotcha.
That we're going to have volunteers in the land. I don't know if it was an insurance deal or what. And that all changed over time. Hmm. So it's been a good change.
Any regrets by listening to the one voice on your shoulder?
Apparently not, because I'm still doing it. So that's the, you know.
That's great.
It's a great organization to belong to. You know, we're about mission. We're all in mission here.
Cool.
And we're all working together for something good. And that's one of the most exciting parts of it for me, is this idea that we all have a common cause that we're about. And that has real drawbacks to it once in a while, but I feel like if everybody else is doing it and I can give my part, that feels really good.
That's awesome. Thank you. Mm. Nina, you said you've been a volunteer for two years, right?
Yeah.
What was the catalyst for you? Why'd you volunteer?
Absolutely. Well, I do want a quick... No one can see us, right? But Dave here and I are very different in age. Mm. And it's awesome that we can sit in the same room and talk about something that we share and we love together. Mm-hmm. So I think that really ties into Pheasants Forever and how we can both love the uplands and we love our dogs. And because of that, and so do you guys, obviously, right? And like, because of that, we can all sit in the same room and be very different backgrounds, very different demographics. I'm not from the cities. I'm from the sticks, you know, and things like that. And like, just be able to have a conversation. So I just wanted to highlight on that. But a good friend of mine, when I was first getting into social media stuff, her and I went on a walk, and she said, you know, she had been an influencer in like the fitness world many years ago. And she said, Nina, like, the biggest thing that you can do as someone in social media is do things beyond social media. And like, when she first told me that, I didn't really understand it. And she was like, what are you doing in your community? And I was like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, if I care about hunting so much, like, and at the time I was really into archery. It was before I got in a bird dog and stuff. And that changed my whole world. But like, at the time I was really into archery. So I was like, yeah, what am I doing? That's actually like for what I care about, or supposedly care about, and what I'm saying I care about on social media. And so that really got me thinking. I grew up as a massive, like, really into volunteering. I was like 4-H galore and things like that. But as I got older, you know, it just kind of fades and stuff, and really involved in my church. But like, yeah, that fades a little bit. And so I got involved in some 4-H stuff again. And like, I did some youth archery stuff. Well, then when I got really into pheasant hunting and got my bird dog, like, everything totally flipped for me. I went from archery hunter to like devout upland hunter. And then I was like, I don't have the same passion for this as I used to. And like, I really care about, I think it's important to volunteer in things that you really truly care about. Like, you can't spread yourself thin volunteering for a bunch of things that you mediocrely care about. And so for me, it was like, I got to find something that fits this passion then of upland hunting. And, you know, you go to all these public lands that I hunt on. There's these Pheasants Forever signs. I'd heard of Pheasants Forever my whole life. Didn't really want to put my money where my mouth was, but so I never was part of it. And then I was like, I think I need to go and do this. And like, I was good friends, pretty decent friends with like the president of our chapter. Like, I just know him through other avenues. And I was like, you know, I should maybe just go try this. And so I just showed up to a meeting one time and, I don't know, pay my dues at some point. And yeah, the rest is history. I mean, now I'm a life member. Like, I kind of bought in a little fast, but I'll take it. So yeah, that was my moment of like, back when, you know, of like, if I'm going to show this stuff on social media and claim to be this hunter and this, you know, promoter of these outdoor activities, like, I got to do more than just live it on social media. Like, I need to live it in my everyday life, and I need to show my community that I care about that too. So that was, for me, where it was the change.
That's awesome. So that is really cool to hear. Will, do you hear these stories? I mean, you work with how many chapters nowadays?
I mean, in Region 1, which is Eastern Minnesota, we have 36 chapters.
And do you hear stories like Nina's across the region?
It's the people are the best part of my job, and they have been for the last 8 years. And Dave was the first chapter meeting I ever went to. We had breakfast, and from there I've probably been to a couple hundred. You know, Nina and I got to know each other just through meeting throughout the chapter and social media, but we are full of incredible people at the chapter level. And so Nina is a great example. So is Dave, but I could have filled this room full of a lot of people that could give a testimony similar to that. And that is what carries me through each day, the good and the bad. It's a really, really special place to work and serve these individuals. I just can't think of a better thing to do. So
Nina, you talked about kind of the catalyst moment where you looked inside and like, I need to get involved and give back. That's one thing. But then there's another thing that happens where you get sticky. You know what I mean? Like you stay and you said you're a life member.
Yeah.
Was there a moment where you felt this is right, this is what I want to take to the next level? Or was it kind of a compilation of the experiences you were having as a volunteer?
Well, I did become a member at our state convention, or life member, excuse me, at our state convention this past year. And, like, that was just, I mean, if anyone that's listening has got to attend the state convention, I cried multiple times. Like, what in the world? There were so many good speeches and speakers, and, like, they just hit the nail on the head about, like, how important it is to care about the outdoors. And I think for me, just like Dave mentioned, like my faith is very important to me. And one of the best ways I can improve my faith and feel closer to God is being outside. And like, if that's how I connect with him, or that's how Dave connects with God, like there's so many other people that connect with God that way too. And if we can just like encourage people that in order to keep connecting, like nature has to still exist. The places like our public lands have to still exist, and they're going away, and we need to care about that. And so for me, it's just been a culmination, but also there have been some really key moments of like how important it is to just care. I would say it's been a mix of both.
I talked a little bit earlier about how just in marketing research, you know, getting your fingernails dirty to a younger generation. And I'm assuming you're the youngest here. So I'll pose the question to you. Does that, when I articulate that from a survey, does that resonate with you as truthful, as legitimate?
I would say we're definitely, like, my generation is definitely doers. Like, don't sit and talk to me in a room or talk at me. Like, show me what we're going to do and let's go do it. And I think that the hardest part is taking that desire for action and making it more than just talk. And I think that's like when you're sitting in those chapters meetings, that's something we've really had to work through as a chapter of, okay, how do we make this tangible? How do we set this into motion? Not just sitting here and be like, I want to go do that. I want to go do that. Like, I have really big aspirations personally of all the things I want to do. Will hears some of them. And being able to have some other level-headed minds of like, how do we actually put this into practice is really good. So yes, I do think we're a generation of doers. Think it gets lost sometimes because of phones, that people think we're not. But I really think when the opportunities are presented enough times and it hears, you know, enough ears reach, it reaches them and stuff, people are gonna come. So
Will, one of the things that I've been here 21 plus years, and over time, that one of the things that people lament as we talk about chapter health, it's that when young people like Nina come into a chapter meeting, they're not always welcomed with open arms, that there's a lot of kind of groupthink and we're going to do things the way we've always done. Don't get me wrong, those folks that started those chapters and have been with the organization for four decades we wouldn't be here without them.
Absolutely.
However, if you wanted, you know, if there, obviously this chapter, volunteers listening, what would be the bit of advice you'd give them to welcoming a younger person into their meetings? What advice would you give to chapter officers?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, and it comes up a lot. And so we do, I don't know if coach is the right word, but we've started to bring that to light a little bit. And so when we get in front of our chapter volunteers, we talk about how even someone with as gregarious of a personality as I am, as I have, if I'm going to walk into a, you know, VFW alone, like Nina did, that's a difficult situation to just open the door and sit down at a table of strangers, even if they are great folks. So the first thing I always talk about is you have to acknowledge what that person, like, they had to sit in their car and fire themselves up to get in there, right? Like, it's a metaphor, but
it is intimidating. You know what,
it's intimidating. Yeah. And if you're ever going to change behavior, you have to understand, like, you have to put yourself in their shoes, as cliche as that is. And so once you start acknowledging that, like, hey, this is not, you guys have been meeting at the same place at the same time for 15 years. And so it's second nature to you. And in order to bring somebody new in, you have to realize how difficult it is. Being open to suggestions, listening is really the critical component to everything. And so when that person has an idea or a question, you know, bring them into the fold. And those new dynamic ideas is what's going to take the next generation of our chapter volunteers off in the future. We've been doing very similar things for a lot of years, and it's built an incredible organization. But if we're going to carry on, we have to be open to the next generation coming in with new and fresh ideas. And so just acknowledging that those ideas are tangible. You can actually get things done. Hands-on Habitat is a great example of that.
Right.
And, you know, we're seeing that more and more. It's the idea that the next president just walked through the door the first 30 seconds of that meeting. Those conversations are going away now. And
explain what you mean there, because that
I have
that's my dream. That's my dream. Tell me how that happens.
but that is doubling down on the intimidation
exactly.
factor.
Exactly. And yeah, I've been to, like I said, I mean, I've been at this almost 9 years, so I've been to a couple hundred chapter meetings. And I've seen this happen where, you know, the Ninas of the world walk in for their first time. Maybe they went to the banquet. The chapter's like, hey, we need more volunteers. And up pops the door and someone looks up from the table and says, oh, there's our new chapter president. Nobody wants to hear that, Bob. That's no, there isn't a person in the planet that wants to be recruited in that manner. And so we acknowledge that that's not the right way to do it. And that's the first step. And those conversations are much different now.
Yeah. Nina, from your perspective, what would you coach that kind of, you know, the chapter volunteer who's brought us to this incredible point for, you know, 40 years, you know, and 26 million acres of habitat accomplishments. So wonderful accomplishments, but to bring along the next generation, what would make it easier for somebody like you walking in the door?
Absolutely. I think on that very first meeting, like, thankfully, I knew the president. I mean, I didn't tell him I was coming, but I knew the president of the chapter. And, like, he was able to say, you know, Nina, why don't you stand up and just tell us a little bit about yourself? He didn't make it a big deal. So I stood up and I said who I was and why I was there, you know, why I cared enough to be there. But then from there, I mean, it's like I said, it's been 2 years. And that's been interesting 2 years for me to try and learn. And Will's heard some of these conversations from me of, like, I don't know what some of this stuff means. Or, like, I don't know what these acronyms are. Or, like, what projects can we be doing that we're not, that I don't even know exist? But I think delegating would be the primary word I would use. And, like, delegating and not just saying, like, you do that, but coaching and, like, you know, helping, like, like, for example, I took charge and said I wanted to be the one running our Hands on Habitat project this month, which was exciting for me and it was good. But I thankfully was able to ask, like, Will for help and stuff. But I would have loved to hope I don't step on any toes, but I would have loved to have someone be like, okay, Nina, you want to take this on? Like, here's what I would do. Like, okay, thank you. Like, I have no idea what to do. I just care about this. And I just want someone to at least give me a little bit of blueprint here. So yeah, delegating with direction maybe is the best way I would say that.
Yeah. set the boundaries and let you make it your own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dave, you've been a guy that has been welcoming to other folks into the chapter.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Any advice?
You know, my deal is always this. Whenever I get a new person, we don't meet in person. We meet on Zoom. So we have all of our meetings are on Zoom anymore. We're just trying to get the number of people we have involved in the board and everything. It's crazy. And Zoom has worked better for us. So we don't have, like, show up at the bar and, you know, let's do that. Unless we have a fun night, which we try and do three or four fun nights a year. But so when I have a new person come in, I meet with them. My deal is let's go to coffee. Because what I want to hear is what's your dream? Why did you come here? Why do you want to be involved? What do you want to do?
Cool.
I'm not interested in what – I don't need to put them into one of my roles or one of our other things. Now, some people come and say, well, I heard you guys coach kids, and I want to coach kids in shooting. Yeah, great. Okay. Here, call Gary Gilbertson. I'll give you his name and, you know, tell me what you do. Richard Hansen came to us and said, I want to start an adult shooting. I'd like to figure out how to do adult, learn to hunt. And I'd like to run that program. Wow, really? Okay, so I spent a year with Richard, you know, coaching. He put together a manual of all the stuff that a new hunter needs to know. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing manual. And he runs the weekend. So, you know, that whole thing. So you never know. Most people come with a list of gifts that they have that they're willing to contribute if they can figure out how to fit it in. But if you never ask them how to fit it in, you know, they're just sitting there waiting for something. And then you say, well, we need help with this. Well, you know, like, we need help with fundraising. Oh, really? Do you know anyone that wants to fundraise?
Yeah,
right. I don't, you know. And yet that's, for a chapter of PF, we're the Habitat organization that fundraises. I mean, that's what chapters do, is raffles and banquets and sporting clay events, and people have to invite. You have to be willing to. Nobody wants to do that, but we all have to do that in order for the organization to go ahead. So we all do that, but then we have something else that's ours that we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what motivates people. So you try and figure out what it is that the new person wants to do and help them get there. Help them accomplish their dream for this organization, right?
Key word is listen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you talked about obviously the first part is fundraise, but the second part, organization's mission, habitat. Yeah. So bringing this back to hands-on habitat.
Yeah.
And I know you've like you've mentioned, you've participated in a couple of them.
Yeah.
And you're smiling. You're giggling.
I love Habitat Days. So I just love them.
So tell us why.
Well, because you're out on the land. And it's not the season yet. I'm not hunting yet, but I'm out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this is usually land, you know, that Carver County, you know, we did their, we helped with their deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I get there. Travis Frank is there, for heaven's sake. And I'm like, what? Travis Frank is here? And there's a camera walking around? What's going on with that? And there's hot dogs at noon. And, I mean, it's going to be fun. Mm. And you know what? I hunt that land. Okay, that's Tiger Marsh. Okay, I've hunted that land many times. I've shot some birds out there, and it's 25 minutes from my house.
Mm.
And I keep telling people, go out there and try it. No, I probably shouldn't be saying this online. Okay, but whatever. Okay, yeah. It's just one of 15 that are close to Minneapolis that I've hunted. All right, but I hunt that land. I hunt down in Worthington, and to go on the land that I get to hunt.
Mm.
Because Pheasants Forever has made that possible,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's a privilege. It's just so fun. And you're out there pulling barbed wire. We pulled barbed wire for I don't know how many hours, but other people were cutting down, you know, little buckthorn, mm-hmm. you know, trees, and other people were doing other stuff and picking up garbage, like you said, like you guys did tires. We had tires. We had a railroad run through, so we had 6x6 railroad ties that we had to move, you know, da-da-da-da.
Will and I could have moved those for you.
Yeah, no problem.
But usually they got – we had – like in Worthington, we had Bobcats. Mm. There was trailer. They had tractors down there. They had a couple of Bobcats where we were at Tiger Marsh too. I mean, there's – people come in with heavy equipment. You're not – you know, I'm 72 years old. I'm an old, old guy.
You're in pretty darn good shape.
Well, reasonably good shape for my age with two fake knees. But – you know, I can still pull barbed wire.
Mm-hmm.
I can, you know, once the tractor's pulled it out of the ground, I can roll it up and put it on another tractor. It's not rocket science, you know. I can cut it off the post.
Well, you've mentioned barbed wire a couple of times. And so, listeners, I know that you're out there and you've sent the emails complaining about barbed wire on public lands.
Yeah.
I mean, we get them. And here's your invitation to... You know, there's only one way to get the barbed wire out of there is to, you know, help. You know, be a part of your chapter and, you know, help a hands-on habitat project pull that barbed wire out of those WMAs and WPAs. Because, you know, my dogs, like I'm sure you or our listeners, have been injured by barbed wire left on public lands. And it ain't pretty, but it's a, you know, it's something that we can help do.
My last... Labrador was black. I had a black lab named Bulldozer, and that's because that's what he was.
Mm.
He didn't go over things. He didn't go under things. He went through things.
Mm.
And barbed wire was no. So I mean, you get two days into a hunting trip, and Bull would have already cut the front of his legs, you know, or his chest, and we'd be going to the vet and trying to get it fixed. And you know,
yeah,
he's gone now. But man, barbed wire is my. I love barbed wire, man. I want to get it out of there. Get it out of that field. Save those dogs, baby.
Nina, what's your takeaway from helping on the Habitat Project? How do you feel about it?
I mean, I just love getting out too. Like Dave said, like you just get to be out. And I think too, how I was saying earlier about being joiners and doers. I think being able to do, like, I'll take that kind of activity any day over, like, sitting around a meal. Like, my husband knows. If you're going to take me on a date, like, let's go hiking. Like, don't take me to dinner. And, and so, like, that's just kind of how I am. So, like, I love walking away feeling like, you know, a job well done, got some sweat going on. I know, like you said, too, like, making the area better for my dog. I definitely care about that, you know, and things like that. So, like, I know for me, and usually make some really great relationships, too, out of it, you know. Some awesome friends that even, like, today, like, Dave and I went to Met if we were both not here caring about hands-on habitat. And so, like, that's just kind of the cool thing. You get to walk away from the day with good connections, and you feel like you worked hard, and you can look back and... And like Dave said, too, like you go back to that piece that I get to hunt. And once you know, I touch this land to clean up that willow brush or clean up that barbed wire, get rid of that tire. And like, how cool to reinvest in something that you care so much about in a different way rather than just your money.
You wanted to scream out bingo a few minutes ago, didn't you?
I did. This conversation has been focused around, like, you know, cleaning up public land. And that's absolutely the primary thing. But what I love about these events is it's twofold. You're going to meet great people. And that's the bet. It's not just that the chapter is going out into these areas to host an event. It's that the chapter is inviting anyone in the area or outside of the area for that matter, in Dave's instance, to come help. And not everybody enters the organization through a banquet or wants to or can, to be frank, but it's free to come roll up barbed wire for us. And you know, I just think about last Saturday, as a 33-year-old father of one, there's not a lot of opportunities left for me to fist pump a stranger who then I'm become close with at the end of this. But that's what happened. I mean, we're moving giant axles with tires attached to them to a pile, and you get done with it and you have to high five somebody. You have to fist pump somebody. It's human nature.
And how did that get there?
I have no idea how it got there, but it's gone now. And that's all that matters. But I didn't know who the gentleman was when I got there that day. But by the time we're done, we're talking like we've been friends for years. And that happens when you're doing something, when you're dirty and damp and exhausted, like, but you're all that, and that's a special thing that happens when you go out and do these kind of events, which is why I love them just so much.
I did. As I saw you, and I don't remember who you were carrying that axle with, but it was legitimately a full axle yep. with two tires, and you had one side and the other guy had the other.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, how did this get into the back corner here? Like, where's the rest of the car, you know? Why didn't they take it apart? Like, this was – anyways, no matter which podcast episode we go back to with Chapter Volunteers, whether it's the Scott Raymelt, Scott Rawl, Kenny Reed, the Chapter of the Year, like the bingo card always gets completed when people talk about the friendships. Mm-hmm. You know, the friendships that are built by volunteering, because people do love the land. They love the dog. They love doing something good, and they become part of the community, whether that's their community or the broader community.
Yeah.
All right. Will Hands-On Habitat, I mentioned, is officially sponsored this year thanks to a buddy of yours.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell us about Onyx.
Yeah, Onyx, obviously a strong partner of ours and cares about the land as well. So there were some conversations that happened, but ultimately what came of this is a sponsorship or dollars in the form of habitat grants for chapters that complete these projects. And so this year, for the chapters out there that have hosted these or that will host these, Onyx has put up $15,000, and we're going to award three different grants. So you just need to tell us about your project. We've got an email set up for that. But we've got a tier one grand prize of $7,500. So the chapter sends in the pictures, the story, and I imagine we'll have a plenty of these. And so that chapter will select that. They'll get $7,500. It's a habitat grant, so they can build out this program at the chapter level. And then we're going to pick a Pheasants Forever Habitat champion and a Quail Forever Habitat champion. And each one of those chapters gets a $3,750 habitat grant. Wow. So cool. The Pheasants Forever Habitat champion, the Quail Forever Habitat champion, you just need to have your event online. It just needs to happen, and we will choose from there. The grand prize, we need a little content. We want a story. Onyx wants to hear about these projects and support them as well. So I believe it runs April through June, and we'll be picking these chapters out in early August. So it's just really exciting to see that kind of thing come through.
You can learn all there is to know about Hands-On Habitat at pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org/hands-on-habitat. You'll see a calendar of events and more information about the Onyx support. I brought up Onyx being a friend of yours, Ben Bredigan, been on the podcast. You guys were college buddies, right?
We were, yeah. We met in school. He was 1 year older than me, and
was that at Bemidji?
We were NDSU.
I was on the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah, we had similar interests. Then we were duck hunters and bush light. That's really how we became. I don't think he would be upset if he hears this. So we became fast friends, and it's carried us through many, many years now. Now we get to work together here. So.
NDSU, ducks, habitat, and bush light.
That's right.
There's your grand slam. All right, so we'll go around the horn and ask for your closing thoughts. Dave, we'll start with you. Anything occur to you as we've talked about being a volunteer, Hands-On Habitat? Any closing notes you want our listeners to think about?
You just need to please come and volunteer. You know, it's amazing how difficult it is for people to make a commitment to come and volunteer and to help out and get on the team. As we all have that, we're all so busy. There's so much going on, and everybody's like, I couldn't give anything. You could give one thing. Maybe you could come and help one day on one thing this year, and it would make a difference. It would make a big difference if you just could put in one day at your local chapter. That's the whole thing, whether it's one habitat day or you get involved in one banquet fundraiser, you're doing one thing for your for Pheasants Forever at the chapter level in your community, it makes a difference.
Cool. If you want to find your local chapter, right on the homepage, pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org, right? There's a button about halfway down. Find your chapter, and you can type in your zip code, and it'll populate with the contact for a local chapter. Obviously, the hands-on habitat projects are happening all month of May. You can click on the website I've mentioned a couple of times, find an event. You can click on the events page, pheasantsforeverevents.org. There's all sorts of ways to find your local chapter events. Same question to you, Nina, closing thought.
Yeah, I wanted to echo what Will said about like the events being for anyone. Like you said, like a lot of people are, you know, I don't go to a banquet or whatever. Well, that's fine. Like, you don't have to come to a banquet, but you can come to an event and you don't even have to be a member. Just come and hang out with us and see what you think. Especially when chapter meetings can be a little more intimidating or just boring sometimes. events are a really great way to do that. So yeah, that would be my big takeaway, as well as just if any younger people are listening to this that are in that age range of, yeah, maybe you got kids, maybe you got a family, maybe you're single, like, come out and meet some people. And at the end of the day, you might find out that you really care about the organization because you're probably on the public lands that it supports.
Yeah.
And also at the end of the day, $35 a year is not a big ask when maybe, you know, going out for dinner or whatever is more than that.
Right.
And so, yeah, for me, it was just a conviction of financial too, as well as wanting to be able to help out. So,
and if folks want to follow along on your adventures or learn a little bit more about the services you provide, how do people reach you, Nina?
Yeah, so my Instagram, like I said, is @in.ninas.nature, and then all the ways to contact me are from there. Otherwise, I do have like a website and stuff too. So
great, thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Will, put a bow on this one for me.
Yeah. You know, I've ended, I end a lot of presentations. I think I've even ended a podcast in a similar fashion, but I always fall back on this, and I hope that the listeners do as well. You know, Dave talked about how we live in a society that's very busy, and that's mm-hmm. true. And Nina talked about, you know, coming into this organization, it being fun, but also you were at State Convention and at times it moved you to tears. And I've seen that as well. And so yeah, I spend most of my day thinking about volunteers and how to serve them, how to grow this place, and what do we really want. And I think this organization is just an incredible place to feel the emotion that comes along with joining and volunteering. And if you're going to give up time to a cause, that cause should move you emotionally, or it should be really fun to be a part of. And I say that a lot, and you, listeners might have heard me say that a lot, but it's because I believe it. Mm. And when I meet the Ninas and the Daves at scale, they're here because this organization, it moves them emotionally, or they attended something that was really fun, or often both. Mm-hmm. And that's what Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever, our chapters, our events, that's what it is. And Hands-on Habitat is just another example of that. And I hopefully that came across on today's podcast.
I absolutely think it did. I thought you articulated it really well. I'm going to do one thing that I don't normally do, and that at the end of the podcast is plead to our listeners to get involved. You know, I don't lay a guilt trip on, right, Dave? You listen right. to all the, I don't lay a guilt trip on uh-huh. very often. But, you know, I know that there's a lot of folks listening who utilize public lands and care about them, but they just haven't taken that next step. Yeah. Hands-on Habitat Day, give us 2 hours, mm-hmm. right? 2 hours, try it out. Move some tires. Will and I were together in rain with, I don't know, 12 other people.
Yeah.
I had a great time.
It was awesome.
And that's, you know, that's an important thing too that I take private. Like, I'm not Joe Rogan, but, you know, like I'm not the world's best podcaster, but I live this,
yep.
right? I love this organization. And, you know, I was out there doing this as well. And if you use public lands and you want to prevent your dog from getting a cut that's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks at a vet to fix, give us 2 hours. Give it a try. pheasantsforever.org/hands-on-habitat. quailforever.org/hands-on-habitat. For Dave Scherf, Nina Hoekstra, and Will Clayton, I'm Bob St. Pierre, thanking you for listening. Now go out there and get involved so you can follow a dog where something good will arise. Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening.